And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 252. I am Silas Sundesign.
I'm Samantha Rund.
And this is the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably.
Probably.
We are back after last week. I interviewed a one-on-one with the musician. That musician was... He brought the food of love, let me tell you. Music. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Samantha and I, this episode, later on in the episode, get into a discussion, mm-hmm. which my ex-wife would have called a fight, about Shakespeare. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting what people consider to be fights.
Yeah. I wouldn't have considered that a fight, but no. My ex-wife would have.
That was a lively
discussion. I did not know that for years. Huh?
Yeah. Lively discussion.
Samantha's passionate about Shakespeare. And so if you start dissing the Shakespeare at all, you see the fire come out.
No, I mean, I'm not. You can have your opinions. People can say they don't like Shakespeare. You can have
your incorrect opinions.
They this, they that. No, you could have your opinions. And I respect that. But Silas had a very specific statement that I completely disagree with. And as opposed to how I often am, where it's like, well, Silas, if you look at it this way, or if we look at that, or you know, get philosophical, all the angles, like straight up this time, I was like, no.
I absolutely loved it. I well, love you. That. I love the fire.
All right.
Spicy Samantha.
It's good to feel alive. It's good to feel alive.
So... I did not tell you though. I had actually thought the other day, I was like, I should work on a Shakespeare monologue to perform for camera. I remember seeing a guy who was trying to do like a monologue a day, like not Shakespeare, but something else. Like always had like this 1 minute monologue he'd do on YouTube. And I was like, that's stupid. And now I'm like, I should do that. Just practice being in front of the camera and doing
just
pieces.
Fun.
So. Maybe I'll actually do something with that. Since I'm not doing comedic things, I might as well.
I guess I could do that too. I hadn't thought about it until you said it. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I have in the past, but I haven't thought about doing that again.
A monologue? Just
Yeah. I
was telling Gretchen why I don't post comedy. I was like, I don't really post my comedy.
Yeah.
And she was like, you put it on Facebook all the time. It's like, no, I tested it on Facebook. I would write it out. And if it got reaction, then I think, well, maybe I'll work on this. But I would not post my, I didn't usually put jokes on because I didn't want to go, hey guys, you know how funny I am? Look at this clip. I'm hilarious, because someone might tell me I'm not. So I don't want to deal with that.
I mean, probably don't set it up that way. Probably don't say, you want to see me being funny? Watch
no,
this
no.
clip.
But like, that's what it feels like for me to put a comedy clip up. I feel like I'm telling people, I'm so confident this is funny that I'm showing it to you.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start every post that you put anything, any post, family stuff, real estate, the weather.
Say, that's hilarious.
Movement, anything. I'm just going to write, that's not funny. You get so desensitized to it. That Ian, you'll just be so emboldened.
That'll be great. I like that.
And that's why, wow, Samantha's like real just be heckled.
Silas, right, Samantha's mean to Silas.
Jeez.
And so for me, like, I think one reason I've also not done acting type of things, like, I do not have the confidence to do a piece and show it to people. And to go, because if you're like, look how good I am. That's what it feels like to me. To me. Damn. Other people are proud. I don't even like put photographs up.
I think like the thing with monologues too is it's a little bit harder because it's going to look different, right? Like it's going to look different if you're doing it in a play versus if you're in a movie, or you know what I'm saying? Like the medium, because even watching some people's audition videos, where it's like a famous actor and they got something, it was still good, but it's much different than when they had the same performance, but it was filmed differently. You know what I mean?
How about in the next month? we do, we challenge ourselves to do a 1 minute monologue.
Yeah.
For camera.
Uh-huh.
And I'll say, maybe I'll even do Shakespeare.
Okay.
I don't have to look stuff up.
100% done. Yes, let's do this.
My voice teacher challenged me to sing at two people that I don't know this week. Like I need to, that I've never sang to, like, but like how to fake it, like how to go like, hey, how's that song? What's the name of that song or whatever? Try to get it in there so that I can do a little song. Cause we're talking about in my self-consciousness of that. So that'll be similar, is if I can challenge myself, get challenged to do a monologue, then maybe I will actually get more brave and emboldened with people. Like I don't share my auditions. Some people share their auditions and I'm like,
I was so tempted to share one. So that I told you that voiceover one, it was like the singing one. I didn't book it. I don't know if you did.
No,
but okay. I'm like, you didn't tell me, we didn't tell each other. So we probably didn't, but there was one note that I reached that I was like, I didn't know I could do that sound. And I was so excited about it. I actually wanted to share it,
that's cool.
But I didn't, because I'm like, well, you hear like what the name of the company was that I didn't yet. So I was like, I probably shouldn't share it. Yeah. But okay. I know I need like,
but anyway,
to go.
Yeah. We talk about Shakespeare. We talk about,
vegetables.
Goals, vegetables. Oh, goals.
Yeah. $1 million.
Yes. Lots. Okay. Good discussion.
Yeah.
So yeah, enjoy that. Like, share, subscribe, folks. Sit back, relax, open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 252 of Black and a Half.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Yes, this is Black and a Half, hosted by Silas Lindenstein and Samantha Rund.
Black and a Half.
Are you familiar with a man named Harry Mack?
No.
He's a freestyle rapper. Caucasian fellow. Mm-hmm. He's on... I see his TikToks and stuff, and I follow him now. So I'm really into him. So I started using... So one of the things, do you remember a thing called Omegle? Do you know what Omegle was? It was like this random video chat thing where like basically you would randomly be talking to somebody. And then once you hit skip or end of the call, it randomly puts you in with somebody else. So you would just,
I've heard like a conversation karaoke or something like that.
Yeah. There's been other ones. Omegle shut down because of,
people being gross with it.
Yes. Basically safety issues. And the guy just got sick of it. Like they didn't, it was a little too random. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this freestyle rapper named Harry Mack that would, he would tell people, hey, give me three words. I'm a freestyle. I like to do a freestyle rap for you. Give me three words and he'll make a rap around them off the top of the dome.
Yeah.
Right. And so one of the things people always comment on is his camera quality. Cause they're like, are you a streamer? What are you? And I always thought about that because like, and so now I'm trying, I've upgraded my camera to a better camera to my actual camera I use for like film shooting.
Oh yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah. The problem is it seems to have a little, I don't know if it's just too much info coming into my camera. There seems to be like a little choppiness or a delay in my speaking. Can you tell?
No, I can't. I just think it's really funny because you look super professional with your setup and your camera. And then here I am at the speakeasy, just like, hand me a drink. Well,
I have two different cameras that I could use. And I wasn't sure even if I should use this one, like aside from a certain, like I was going to start using it for like my like real estate or tours of places, camera, right? To try to upgrade the quality. But I was like, is this, I was telling Gretchen, like how, why do we see this as professional? Cause like a camera, like a film camera, you tell it's a film camera because it has the focus, right? The focus is in one spot. And then usually behind you is a little blurred and we get a sense of that being professional. But also like, but a regular video camera, which has kind of like, I guess a wide aperture or a low aperture, one of the two, it shows everything in the same, there's no focal point. But I'm like, yeah, so then all the stuff I spent time placing, you can actually see what it is instead of the random. Also, if I put my hand too close, it like, oh, right. Now my hand's out of focus. Like I got to keep everything here or I'm out of focus. And also age wise, this I'm like, oh, this is why old people like me don't want 4K cameras, because we're like, oh, now you can see all the wrinkles and everything. I want a nice glossiness. So I'm not sure I'm going
to. Yeah, you used to look 12, but now.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm like, you know, I paid for these straight teeth, so I want to show them off more often. Check it out. Look, hi. So I might switch back to the other camera because I feel, plus it feels like there's a little bit of lag. I don't know why. To me, there is. So I'm gonna when I try to edit this, because I was having trouble editing something yesterday.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we'll see. It'll be easier to see the finished product too. Would it?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it might be too much information, like too good of a camera. Like it can be too good. Things can be too good. Right? Like in life.
Sure.
You don't want things too good. Then you have high expectations. And I've learned out of life to keep them low. And then you're much happier. Low expectations. And try to be as dumb as possible.
I'm sorry. Is this our Black and a Half podcast? Or are you trying to do a sort of co-production with the Manosphere somehow?
The Manosphere?
I don't know. I just was told have low expectations. Don't let things get too good. Have low expectations. Be pretty dumb. And then you'll be happy. I just feel like...
Is that part of the Manosphere?
For women, I suppose. They want like subservient women.
Oh, I'm talking about myself.
Expectations. Well, I know. I was just teasing you. I was just like out of context. Just hearing that is like...
That's, I guess, yeah, that's what they, the Manosphere is amazing.
I don't know. I think you got to be careful about expectations for sure. It's like expectations without attachment. Because I think low expectations, no thanks, not interested. But being too attached to, like, there's a balance.
Right, but you can't. But we can't have too high of expectations, right?
I mean,
there's wishful thinking, and then there's like what you expect, right? Like, right? I mean,
yeah, of course you can. I think it's probably depends on the person, you know.
I want to make $1 million this year.
Okay,
that's my expectation.
Yeah.
Well, that's my high expectation.
Yeah.
But is it realistic? Like, is that like, and am I going to, if I don't make $1 million, but I've still made a lot of money, do I have a right to be sad? Oh, like I didn't make $1 million.
This is the day to ask these questions, make a million. Silas. What? The week I've had, this is the day to ask you the question. I think, yes, you can always be sad, but you could also always be happy. And, you know, that is...
I'm manic. So if I'm manic, then it's great. I just mean
like in life, because it's like, okay, so if you set the goal for $1 million.
Yeah.
There's a few different things. It's like, are you willing to do what is required to make $1 million? And then is setting that goal... and changing those behaviors and habits to get to $1 million, it can still make, it can make your life better or worse, depending, really. I mean, right?
Yeah.
Like, because once you have a certain amount of money, that you need that certain amount of money. But when you get extra, it doesn't necessarily equal happiness. So that's where you're like, are you going to feel better or worse? I don't know. It depends. What do you do to get those $1 million? How does your life look like? How does your life look? You know, so that's where it's, I don't think it's inherently good or bad. It just, there's a lot of factors.
I think you need to know what's going to make you happy, though. Which part is going to make you happy, right? Like, I will be happy at 100,000.
Right, but it's not really the 100,000 that makes you happy. That's the thing.
Well,
no, I'm just saying, I'm like, it's like the attachment to that end product. I think a lot of people get themselves, I know you asked me a simple question and then here I go, but like, you know, it's like the attachment to the end product that people get so attached to that can make them, it's not really the $100,000. What is it? It's the financial stability. It's like knowing you could take your family on vacation. It's, you know, all those other things. It's not actually the money. It's what you do with all of the money and how you feel because of that money. So how you think you're going to feel if you make $1 million, how you think you'll feel, you might get to $1 million and realize, I don't feel this way. This sucks. Or you might get there and be like, I feel this way. This is great. Or you might have to give up X, Y, and Z to get there and then be like, it really wasn't worth it. Or it might be a really good journey to get there and be like, this was totally worth it. So I think sometimes, or often for people, when we make our goals of this, reaching this goal is what's going to make me happy, we don't always pay enough attention to, well, will the process of getting this goal make me happy? And what is it that I really want to achieve, feel, and be by having this goal? 100% me making more money this year? Yes, that would make me happy. 100%, like no questions asked. But, you know, depending on how big my goal is and what I would have to do to get there, then it might be like, I don't know.
It makes me think of soccer, like everything else does. But in this way, it is like you can't focus on necessarily the end result, because you have to enjoy the development process. You have to enjoy working on stuff. You have to enjoy, your goal can't be to be the best player in the world. Your goal has to be to put your all in. It has to be to enjoy soccer and discover and get a little better, try to get better at certain things, because you'll, like a play. I love why theater works for me so well is, for me, everything after opening night is anticlimactic. I love the process. I love working on the play, digging into the play. And once we've hit that completion point, I'm ready to move on to the next thing.
You know, I was going to ask you that. I was going to say, wait, so once the play opens, you don't think you do any more process for it?
But you kind of, I mean, you're sort of in a lock, right? You can't change too much because
the process,
the director will get changes. Mad at you.
It changes. The process changes.
Supposed to do it again for the first time, right? Like you're supposed
I feel like you're constantly finding new things, and like it can get deeper. It's not as broad. You're not like discovering as much. It's maybe a little bit more narrow, but you know,
I think if I haven't got the, as a director, if I haven't got the actors 95% there by opening night, I think I did a bad job.
Oh, you know what? I'm totally thinking of it as an actor.
But as an actor,
thinking about as a director.
As an actor, I hope my director gets us there. I hope that any changes are going to be minor.
Yeah.
Like really minor. Like, or I'm discovering things about the show, but I'm still kind of doing it similar because, like, if I didn't discover something by then, or if we didn't get to it. I'm trying to think of a specific example. I'm also a director who I say I'll give notes until closing. Like if I go and see the show, I'm like, hey, try this, because once you add in the audience, there's a different element, and like how to get that across. So I do, and when a director doesn't do that for me, when they are done opening night, I say as an actor, I am really ready to move on to the next thing, because like, oh, if we're not gonna make adjustments, I don't like the process is if the process is kind of done.
Oh, that's so interesting. I would always give myself notes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the best I could do is myself notes. If I can remember what did I do? If we discuss stuff like, that was really nice. I try to get people in early on my rehearsals, my run throughs and stuff, because I want to get notes, because I want to see if people react to the play, like, because I'm like, I want to be as ready for the preview audiences as I can be.
Uh-oh, your battery, it's exhausted.
The thing I didn't even think about was the battery element of this, because the other one is plugged in always, and this one is not plugged in. Or the other one was not plugged in.
So now is this a different camera then?
Or it's you a just different camera.
It? Yeah. So now you can see. We could take a poll, actually, viewers. Let us know.
At do
you
this prefer point,
camera one or camera two?
At about 15 minutes in, there's a slight change.
Yeah.
A little wider, different camera, focal length.
Yeah.
I am noticing everything in back is actually out of focus. So now I'm like, cool. Oh, I thought everything was out of focus. In focus before. It really depends on what I'm doing, I think, for each.
Yeah. Episode. I have an opinion, but I don't know if
what is it? What is your opinion?
The viewers. They could let me know.
But
let me
what
know
is if you agree opinion? With me or
not. I prefer camera one.
Oh yeah, the cinema.
Yeah.
Though I think I might be thinner in this one.
Oh gosh.
This will be the real test. It shows my bottom region. This one is further down. So I will have to be dressed from here up, like further wearing this than I do. I could just wear a shirt down to here.
I get that. But normally for anybody listening on and not viewing this, when he's talking about his bottom half, he's not talking about his pants area. He's talking about his shirt. Bottom half is still his top. It's still his torso.
Weren't we talking about the shirts that you only get like that cover a tiny part?
Probably
the sleeves. The sleeves. Didn't you buy some like sleeve only things?
Wait a second. I mean,
you saw something that was sleeve only. You bought some sleeves.
I don't remember.
To be warm, because it was like to keep you warm when you want just a little bit of sleeve. And it barely has. I swear that was you.
I don't remember that. At one point, I probably purchased that when those used to be a thing.
Oh.
But
maybe it was white. Maybe it was white Samantha. my wife.
I know. Yeah. Gretchen and I, like with all of our free time, but it would be nice to hang out with her.
Yeah. Okay, here's something funny, though. Like, I'm not used to this. I accidentally stepped on my remote control for the room that I'm in here. Uh-huh. I accidentally stepped on it when I went to go change the camera. And so now Netflix popped back up. So like it's scrolling through like the ad. Well, not now.
Are you going to turn it off? Because that'd be super distracting.
That's why I'm bringing it up. It was like, oh, that's now it's back to a clock and screen.
Yeah, that'd be really distracting.
But it made me like see like I didn't see this movie out called The Liver King, which I believe must be something like The Lion, not The Lion King. Wait, no. What was there? There was. Do you remember the tiger thing?
Tiger King. Yeah. Everybody was so obsessed with that, right?
Yeah.
Towards the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, I certainly watched it. Yeah. Definitely. I watched it.
Did you know that there's one in Washington? Like, apparently out in Squim?
A Tiger King?
Well, there's like a, well, basically, it's, there's a safari thing. Like, what? A safari, like, but it's one of those, like, zoos that aren't affiliated with zoos. And you can, like, go feed, you can, like, hand feed the tigers or whatever there. Like, they have, it's one of those unsanctioned zoos, like the Tiger King does.
I did hear of one, but I didn't hear of it being unsanctioned or, like, you know.
Well,
animal cruelty.
I think they have the license. I mean, they have whatever's minimally required, but they do not think they do like the Tiger King. They do the things that they say don't do. These are wild animals. Don't do that with these animals. Anytime you can touch a wild animal that has some sort of danger usually attached to it, they are not affiliated with recognized zoo organizations.
It's just why it's never a good idea to touch a man, you know.
Yes.
Don't touch wild animals. Don't do it.
Don't touch men.
Yeah.
It's the lesson.
That's the lesson
of today.
You know, of all the things in Tiger King that I remember, not a ton right now. it's been a long time, but one of the things that really stood out to me that really upset me was how they were feeding them rotten meat. That they were feeding the animals rotten meat. I was really upset about their poor diets and their living conditions.
Now, are tigers, I don't remember. Can they only eat, are they only supposed to eat fresh?
I don't know, but eating rotten meat?
If they eat it in the wild, then I don't think they eat it
if it's rotten. I mean, they're going to come for a fresh kill, right? You don't see, like, the hyenas coming out. Well, although the hyenas could fight them for meat, right? But, like, I remember they were talking about it and it was not good.
That they weren't supposed to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless if that was my inner monologue of just being horrified for them. And that's what stood out.
I mean, vultures have the stomach for it, right? I didn't know if.
I see.
I didn't know how long they have to wait. I don't know if they're like humans. Got to eat it fresh.
Yeah, don't even wait for it to get off the grill.
No aged. Did I tell you about Anthony Bourdain's thing about rot?
I don't know. Okay. Let's hear it.
So Anthony Bourdain, the famous restaurateur and chef, when he was alive, he talked about how we talk about freshness of food.
Yeah.
But that's not actually what we want. He's like, fresh food is actually not very good or tasty. Like, you actually want like a ripened pear.
Yeah.
Ripened banana. It, as in like the best meats are aged. He said, if you got fish right out of the sea, you're not going to just eat it. Even if it was safe, you would not. The texture will taste really weird. And so you want a certain level of age to it. And the point being that it actually isn't the level of freshness that you want. It's actually the appropriate level of rot. A ripened piece of food is actually, it's the level of rot that it has gotten to. It's always decay. And I was like, I cannot wait to tell my mother-in-law when she cooks. This was the perfect level of rot.
Oh, yeah. That's just.
But it's a fascinating thing that really, it blew my mind thinking about it. Like, you really don't, there's not many things you actually want fresh off of whatever. Like, you want it ripening. Ripening is decaying. Mm. And we don't really think of it like that. But there is a good level, which is why in other countries, they will hang food out, meats, and they are somewhat safe until a certain point. And well, I mean, they die there too from that, but we die here too because they're mishandled. So I don't know, but I just love the rot thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's,
it reminds me of the ideas that there's no such thing as a vegetable. Vegetables don't exist.
What?
Vegetables don't exist.
Because?
There's no such thing as a vegetable.
There is no spoon?
Huh? I don't know that one.
Quoting the Matrix.
Name a vegetable.
Spinach.
It's a leaf. It's actually a leaf.
But I don't even know how to argue with this, argue about this right now, but I don't think a vegetable is like, are you saying there's no such thing as a fruit then?
No, the fruit's a thing, but there's no such thing as a vegetable.
Okay. What about broccoli?
It's a flower.
What about peas?
Peas are a legume, I believe. May not be a legume, but they are.
I don't know. I think it's
right. So a vegetable is actually, there is no, in biology, there's no such, or botany, there's no such thing as a vegetable. Vegetable is a culinary term.
Oh, okay.
Which just means anything. Like it can, it means non-meat and not really fruit. Not really a sweet fruit. It's like a savory.
Seems like it's got to have some reason why something is classified as a vegetable.
Well, tomatoes are classified as a vegetable to avoid taxes on fruits. Because botanically, they're a fruit.
Yeah, I have heard that.
And that's,
I mean,
the
not
first,
the taxation, but yeah. I have heard that it's really
a
fruit.
That's why, because there was a tax on fruits coming into the New World. And so they're like, why are we going to tax tomatoes? This is ridiculous. We like it too much. And so they're like, well, it's a vegetable. Let's call it a vegetable.
I mean, it doesn't seem like a fruit. I mean, I can eat a tomato like an apple, but it definitely doesn't taste the same way.
It's because it's the seed inside that makes it the fruit. So I just found it interesting to discover that there is no actual such thing as a vegetable. It's just a vernacular that we've adopted.
Yeah.
And there's no such thing as a fruit. This is why I wish there was a trivia game with completely worthless knowledge.
Yeah.
That's the one I would be good at. Like, is there no value to this piece of trivia?
Wasn't that Jeopardy? That's,
no, I think there's a lot of value.
But there's also a lot of stuff that like
smart people.
Yeah.
I will win the dumb Jeopardy.
Okay.
That's what we need. Dumb Jeopardy. Not Black Jeopardy. Not regular Jeopardy, but Dumb Jeopardy. I will win the Dumb Jeopardy.
Okay.
Here's some inane, stupid, unhelpful knowledge. But I still can't remember how many square feet are in a acre.
Hey, didn't Gretchen get that for like your trip to Nashville? Didn't she get like the skirt that was really cute? And then she got this sort of like bolero. Or did you go to Nashville? I'm sorry. I'm thinking to where you said maybe white Samantha said that. But didn't she get, she got this cute skirt, right? And then
maybe
she got the arm thing to go with that.
It could have been that. She's cold often.
I really want to know now. I'm so curious. Can you stop the podcast and go ask her? No, I'm just kidding. Just text me. Like text me later. Text me later.
Text her. Did you get a skirt for Nashville?
No, I'm pretty sure you did mention the skirt, but I want to know if she got that like shawl or shrug type of thing.
God,
for that.
I'm not.
I'm curious.
I've tried. Yeah. I'm like, God, I hope I don't get in trouble here.
Oh no. Don't ask then.
Did I mix up Samantha and my wife?
Okay.
On what they were wearing.
That would only be problematic in very rare circumstances, but I think for a sort of basic outfit.
Honey, you bought that really hot outfit, right? Was it you or was that Samantha? Which one?
Oh Lord.
My bad.
That's terrible.
She's so cold is a thing. Some medical things too because of it, but she's just, I mean, most women I feel like are colder.
Yeah.
Than But she'll get really nice dresses and really nice tops and something I'm loving. And then she's wearing a sweater over it or a sweatshirt. Yeah. And I'm always like, I don't know why it matters what you buy because I can't see it. She's like, do you like it? Yeah. okay, let me put my sweater over it now. Like, we now know I can't imagine it, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate. You can't. Oh, yeah, right, because you posted that thing. Same for me.
Wait, did we not talk about this?
No, I don't think we did, or maybe on Facebook you posted that and commented, but I saw that a while ago, like separately, and yeah. I was surprised.
You I was don't like, see anything?
Oh, no.
Either?
No, like when, okay, for listeners, we're talking about like, if I say apple, do you get a picture of an apple in your head? Or if we say not a fruit, do you get a picture of a vegetable? No, vegetables don't exist. Okay. No, I just.
Like what? Is it an outline of an apple?
No.
Is it a detailed apple? Is it a thing? Or do you see like, nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I get the sense of it. I get the feeling of it and the sense of it. But
that's where I am. I think like it's like a memory of what an apple, a memory feeling.
Like, and so I think in your post, you had said something about, you know, you would be reading more. Did you say that?
Yeah.
You would be reading more.
Oh my
and
God.
And that's the thing that's so interesting is I read and I get the sense of it, but I don't know that I really like. Sometimes I do get, I do see stuff in, I don't know. That's weird.
What's the most interesting thing about a book to you?
Oh, the most interesting thing?
Like, what do you really, when you read it, or do you get caught? Oh, for example, for me, I think it's always been plot. I'm very interested in the plot and the story that's going on. And I always thought that was just, I didn't understand why other people weren't. Like, I'm like, oh, I would make fun of the overly descriptive books a little bit, right? But now I'm thinking, oh, if I could have imagined what it actually looked like, I get why you need so much detail. Yes. Like,
I think it depends how overly descriptive. I remember my English teacher in high school, he made us read so much Thomas Hardy, this like old English writer. And he just would have these descriptions that went on and on and on and on. And I did not enjoy that. I didn't. So I mean, yeah, it depends how descriptive it is and what it's describing for how much I care. Like if I'm emotionally invested, then it's very different. So plot and emotional investment.
I was reeling that when I and I don't mean this in a sexual way, but like fantasies, like when you fantasize something, I think I fantasize more about the emotional feeling of something and not of the actual, because the old thing that, oh, if you want to be not scared of speaking to a public audience, imagine them without your underwear. I always thought that was an expression.
You said imagine them your underwear.
In only underwear. Imagine them only in their underwear, right? I always thought that was just like kind of an expression, like, oh, okay.
Right. Like everybody's human.
But I was like, wait, I've now learned people can actually stare at somebody and imagine or think of them and imagine what it would look like if they were just wearing underwear. I have no ability to do that. And then I took it to the next level going, wait. So when somebody gets upset, I've never understood why someone got upset so much about when they hear that some guy, because it's always a guy, right? Some guy is fantasizing about them without their permission. And I'm like, well, you can't control people, but like, why? So what? But what I didn't get was that they could actually, like, if they see someone like a movie, like they're fantasizing at that level, then I was like, oh my God, no wonder you're mad. Like that totally makes sense. But I didn't know in this world of mine, it's like, well, so what? They're just thinking about it, but it's not like they can, actually see it, but some people can actually see this. And that blows my mind.
I want to know too, what people are thinking and how many people do I don't know, but I have had certain sort of, I think it really is more the feeling. Cause I also think I have had certain flashes where people have described something to me that I'm like, I don't want to see that, you know, or they just described it thinking I would just hear it as a funny story, but it's like, I saw it, but if I don't see it, then what was I seeing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I've had moments where I feel like I thought I imagined that. Like,
yeah. Or, maybe there are certain moments.
But I dream vividly. I do dream very vividly.
I do too. Yeah, so like, I was actually just thinking, maybe I see it, and for the director thing for you too, like I will sometimes see it, like if I'm moving, like doing blocking or thinking of this is going to play out like this. But again, I think it's more of like the feeling of it, not like the intricate sort of
yes,
like paintings of it. It's like I get the sense of it.
Yes, I cannot pre-block a play. I can't really pre-block cinema either, which has always been a problem for me. That's what one thing that held me back. I didn't understand how people can totally see it, but I've learned that you can. It's kind of block, but I don't think people are can. Most people in film don't want to be as loose as I am, like about, oh, we can just change it, you know. Yeah. Because you don't have 6 weeks like you do in a play to change things. But I think I'm good at, because of my ADHD, I think I'm good at pattern recognition. So I recognize, oh, there's certain key things I need to do that will create this emotion to the audience. Mm-hmm. So I know this person kind of needs to end up on their knee to propose, right? Because that's going to be a visual. It's going to be a clue, certain patterns that we're going to recognize, and we'll get that part. So how do I get them there? So we work toward that. Ideally, unless they come up with something else, which I'm totally fine with, but we just got to make this a real moment. Make it real and seem authentic. But I've never understood. I thought they were BSing kind of, or I thought they were just kind of figuratively saying how they can see the whole thing. Like, oh yeah, I can totally see it now. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can't really see it though, right? And I'm like, oh, I'm apparently in the 5% of people that can't.
It's only 5%?
Yes.
What the heck? Studies. I need to start asking. You know what? I'm going to start asking people this at open houses. No, I'm just kidding.
Bring the apple.
I'm very curious. Huh?
Bring the apple picture.
I'm so, you know, and the other, oh gosh. Okay. I'm so curious, because like the other thing too is like, I have typically a very like good sense for detail. For example, I can see somebody and then I don't see them for like 2 months or something, and I'll see them again and I'll be like, oh, did you dye your hair? Or, and it's not even somebody that I see every day. So isn't that odd?
No.
Like to like not visualize things a ton, but then also just like really notice some of those, like I'm clocking all these little things. I notice it.
It's not strange for me. That sounds normal to me, but that might not be usual. I'm discovering this about. I had this guy. I had a client who's recommended me. I was showing him and his wife many houses. Many. Got them into a house. So we were together. Inspections and everything in the house. Da da da. A year later, I run into him at a backyard of the party, at a party of someone who introduced me to him, or they by email, whatever.
He didn't remember you.
He did not recognize me. He's like, oh, I'm Michael. I'm like, yeah, I know. I sold you your house. He's like, oh God. Oh yeah. Oh, sorry. And now I was like, oh God, my newsletter does nothing like to remind people of who I am. But now I've seen this thing where there's people who have this inability to recognize faces.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And he so might be he in was that. Like that.
Yeah.
He might have that. Cause he's got a couple things going on. Right. Yeah. So there was a couple things going on. That might be one of them. So I'm trying not to be offended by that.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So he could have that. I don't know how deep that I do get confused by that. Like, well, how much you got to be able to recognize somebody.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that one up, because that's a confusing one to me. How do you not recognize people's faces? Like, at what level does that become a thing? I don't know.
I don't know. And sometimes people do have that where it's like racially specific for them, where it's hard for them to differentiate depending on somebody's
race. Oh, so he's racist.
No, but they don't, they're not even racist. Like some people can be racist, but some aren't. And they just have a hard time, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you might not know,
because it was weird. I saw that same guy like 2 weeks ago and he was like, Silas?
Sounds like, who was it? I forget if it was Sierra. Might have been Sierra or Willow. Sierra or Willow. I think it was Sierra. That was like, we're at a mall and she's like, Daddy, is that Manny? Up ahead, I'm like, no, dude, that's not even close. Dude,
oh, that's just, so funny.
Just because they're black does not mean it's the same person, honey.
Oh my gosh, that's really funny.
Yeah, like that.
It'd be great if he was doing something real embarrassing too. Oh gosh, that's hilarious.
Okay, so my son has a performance today.
Oh, that's so exciting.
It's the second grade. They're doing like this assembly.
Uh-huh.
And so they're going to sing. They sing, right? Oh. But I don't know, there's some kind of transitional sketches or whatever.
Yeah.
He has a line.
Oh.
And he said he loves it. He is so excited to have the line. I'm like, do you know? And he's like, yeah, it's like, what if they're aliens? And everybody responds, aliens. And he's so excited about this.
So cute.
Yeah. He likes to be by himself. He's a little introverted in that sense. But he seems to also like to do the performance thing.
That's so cute.
Like he's not always aware of what's going on, which is good, probably good. But he definitely seems to be in the, like, if I ask him to sing along with me, he'll start singing along with me. Where Willow doesn't want to sing along with me. She's like, no. She's going to get embarrassed. I don't know if at the same age would have worked. So I'll see if he grows out of that.
Yeah.
But I'm just very excited and to get a video of him, see if he's paying attention. Because Willow actually at his age, younger than his age, I think. I took her to kid stage in Everett when I was teaching. So she went into a class, did a class. And at the presentation, she was like watching everyone else do the presentation. She didn't participate.
Oh,
she wasn't doing any of the stuff. She was just like, oh, look at them. Oh, that's fun. That's what they're doing. Gosh. It was a class that was slightly older, but they thought, well, it's your kid, so they'll probably be fine.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But she's also her mom's kid. So her mom's mom is not into performing for people and at all. At all. So it's I'm looking forward to seeing this, getting a video for his debut.
That's adorable.
Debut. Would you put your kid into any theater thing if they asked? Would they have to ask?
Oh boy. I mean, I was just thinking when you were talking about it, I was thinking, oh, when she gets older, her first concert. So I was just thinking, oh, so cute. I can't think that far ahead. I feel like she's already growing so quickly. Yeah.
Like, you know? I didn't ask my kids about doing sports. I just put them in it.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you're going to take piano.
Yeah, because by the time I would put her, I wouldn't think to put her into theater until she was older, you know? So like for elementary school, I wouldn't think of doing that if she asked.
But well, you know, there's classes for that, like that people sign their kid up for them.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't think to do that. I mean, how I feel right now is I would do different classes instead.
Do you feel like Wait, how old did you start doing performance stuff?
I mean, I probably was like doing it forever, right? But the first time that I was actually taking classes, I mean, I did some school plays. I think the first play I did, I was like in second grade or something. But as far as actually taking it more seriously for signing up for theater class, not just whatever the school play was, but like doing extra, that would have been, oh, I guess it was middle school. Yeah, I mean, probably whenever I had the option to sign up for a play, I probably did. But in terms of having like a theater teacher, I don't know that I had an option for a theater teacher until I was in high school. And in middle school, I could audition for like a play they were doing, but I don't think there was like a specific like theater class that was in the regular schedule. It was just like an extra thing you could do. Yeah. So
I played Santa Claus in fifth grade. And then there was in sixth grade, I did like a little like class thing, like our English class section.
Yeah.
Where I played Rip Van Winkle. It was the first time I beat the popular kid at something. And it was I said, I want to try for that role. I wanted to do it. And then in middle school, in high school, I got cast in the all school play. Mm-hmm. And then there was a senior play that I got a part in. And otherwise I didn't really do much. There wasn't much theater opportunity for me. And it did make me think when I went to college, it seemed like everybody, all the kids who had been big theater people in high school, it seemed like they had to spend the first 2 years just getting ripped apart and torn down because they were over actors and did too much. And then they would rebuild them or at least a year of like, they had to get humbled a bit. Like, okay, this is not that high school.
That didn't happen to me.
Yeah.
Sorry. No,
you were
like
just
a joke.
I'm so like, solid.
Yeah. I mean, actually, yeah. It's like, yeah.
Well, I wasn't at a performing arts school. I was at a regular school. So maybe the kids who went to performing arts schools were better actors to begin with.
I don't know. I didn't go to performing arts school
either. I don't know. So it's made me always wonder, like, well, if my kid wants to be an actor later, it's not like they need to take a class.
Yeah.
Now.
I mean, sure, it could be helpful, but also it might, like, there's so many ways in. And life experience is so important. So it's like, there's so many different ways in, and who knows by the time they're older, what that stuff's going to be like anyway, you know?
Or what the style of acting be completely different?
Yeah. Like what, you know, I still think that classical stuff is like good foundational stuff, like doing scales kind of, you know, you can still
Shakespeare's scales.
Well, so, yeah, I think Shakespeare's like scales. Yes.
Kind of advanced.
Yeah. Well, okay, but not the way I teach Shakespeare. I know I always get so excited
scales
about it.
Scales is like, blah, 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 blah.
Well,
just the vocal warm-ups. That's what. La, 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 la. Unique New York. Unique New York.
Oh, that reminds me.
I don't think Shakespeare should be done until college.
Oh, I completely different. I 100% disagree.
They cannot understand it.
False.
They cannot feel it like
false.
They do. We are too pampered as individuals to understand, grasp the language of that day.
False.
Have you ever seen a good Shakespearean production from high school age people as a group?
I don't know, but I mean, they're not at the level, like any production they do at that age, it's not going to be at the level that they do it when they're older. Like there's a growth process.
I directed some great high school plays.
Okay.
Great. That has to be developmentally appropriate for it.
But I disagree. I mean, I cannot. I don't know. Oh my God, Silas!
It's like it's like taking a rec soccer player and having him play in the MLS.
No, I just, there's so, okay. So it's like, what is your goal? Oh, so I guess it ties back to the goal of $1 million. It's like, what is your goal? Is your goal that you want these high school students to be able to perform to a professional level? Then of course they're not going to perform.
At a developmentally appropriate level.
Yeah. Yeah. But saying that they shouldn't learn it and they shouldn't do it because it's not going to be good. That's not the point. The point is, are they learning and are they growing and are they having fun and enjoying themselves? That's the point. Like, they are they enjoying themselves
or are they lying to sound like good theater kids? What are you talking
about? I did Midsummer Night's Dream in high school. And
you loved it.
And I played Juliet. And I loved it.
And you were like, I love Shakespeare. Yes. You really loved Shakespeare.
Yes.
It wasn't a pretense. When did you first love Shakespeare?
Oh my gosh.
From the womb?
I don't know, but I also read like poetry growing up. I read like, you know, some classic poetry growing up. Like, I love language.
I read Dr. Seuss too.
Not Dr. Seuss, but like, you know, I read things to where I like the language. And of course, absolutely, like playing Juliet now, I would be light years better, but I mean, I wouldn't be because I'm like old. I'm too old to play Juliet, but I could do the delivery way better now than I did then because I'm a way better actress. Right.
Yeah.
But there's something that, you know, teenagers understand about that production because of their age and their hormones and their this and their that. Like, there's,
if they can understand it. Yeah.
No, but there's something they still pick up and understand. It's not going to be as nuanced, and they might only get like one or two pieces of it, but there's something that they get. That's like saying people shouldn't play soccer just because they're not going to be like champs or whatever. Like, that's like saying that because people that are second graders, they're not going to play it at the level they would in college. So don't even bother teaching them them until they're in college.
But I think it's more like having them play against college students.
No,
or even playing with college students.
No, like, okay, Silas, I've taught Shakespeare. I've taught Shakespeare to like middle schoolers and high schoolers and college kids and professional actors. Like, I could even teach it to elementary school kids. I mean, it would be very tailored. It would be like, you know, something very different. But
I've directed Romeo and Juliet, and I've directed Macbeth for kids, for high schoolers. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like they got better growth from doing the things that were closer, that were a little simpler for them.
But that's, well, I think the question is, what do you think of growth? Because part of what I enjoy about teaching it to younger kids is I enjoy giving them more confidence for their ability to decipher difficult language.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy helping them know that they have a way in and that it doesn't have to be, you know, this, you know, it can be really intimidating, you know?
Yeah.
So clearly it's something I get very fired up about, and I know
that's,
it's not
nice. This is great. I like seeing Samantha fired up about Shakespeare. I'm going to have to heckle you about Shakespeare more.
Oh my gosh. And now, I mean, there's so much that I don't know. I'm pretty removed from some of it, but.
From what? I mean, Shakespeare?
Yeah. You know,
how could you be removed from Shakespeare?
I mean, I'm just not practicing it. I'm not reading it. I'm not doing it, but am I living some of it? Oh yes. Oh yes, I am. I mean, we all are.
The tragedy of Samantha Rund.
Oh no, it's not a tragedy. It's not a tragedy.
The comedy.
It's not because, you know, anybody living anything at Shakespeare, you can find a character that like, it fits anybody. It's like, there's such a collective of life.
What Shakespeare character are you?
Yes. Yes. No. And you could be a different one on different days. No, there was one where, okay, I know, and I know you have to go soon too, but there was one where it's, Now I'm trying to remember. I think it's Portia. I think she's talking to Lord Bassanio. Is that the Merchant of Venice? Like I said, it's a little foggy. It's been years. But there's this monologue she has that's quite famous about how she would be more. She's never wanted to be more for anybody. But for this person, she would be want to be so much more beautiful, so much more rich, so much more this, so much more that. Again, paraphrasing. Yeah. It's been a long time. And I didn't identify with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a little like, yes, I'm being judgy. I was a little bit like, you're not being a good feminist. And why do you want to change yourself so much for a man and have some self-worth? You know, whatever. I'm thinking these things. But I got to tell you, like, after becoming a mom, I don't like 100% feel that way about my kid. Like, no matter what I do, it's like, I always want to do it better. And not saying like, I don't care, you know, if I'm in a relationship or whatever with the person I'm with, like, of course, you know, you guys always want to be improving and appreciating each other and all that stuff. But it's like, it's different, you know?
Yeah. No, I got you. I get, yeah. I get that. I was hearing something about yesterday about Shylock speech.
Oh.
While we look at it now as a kind of a bit anti-Semitic part,
yeah.
He has one of the greatest speeches in Shakespeare. Yeah. For those of you that don't know, if I am cut, do I not bleed?
Yeah,
it's still relatable today. Yeah. And I remember in high school relating to that and being the only Black kid around, and the way it was treated. And so I totally get that feeling. But
there's some. I mean, I will say that in terms of knowing the historical aspects of it and getting super academic with it, that was not my strong suit. I was more interested in sort of like the actory human sort of emotional stuff of it. And plays, having historians come in and tell me that other stuff is like, great, I'll take notes and I'll use that to help inform stuff. But that's not,
I think if you do use it in a high school, it should be performed. I don't think it should be read sitting down, because that's not where I don't think you understand. It was not meant to be read.
A mix. My English teacher was really good about doing that. It was, I think it was Hamlet. It was really fun, but we read it, but we would also do it out loud too. And like only like three of us in the class were actors or something. So it was mostly non-actors who were doing it, but they were also having a good time.
Aww.
I know.
Look at the good memories.
Happy memories.
Oh, we got to get going. Hey.
Yeah.
Thou'st was a good episode-ith.
Yes.
Thou'st was a good.
Yes.
Thou, the most kind, gentle Samantha.
And you will love this because of all of your music playing, right? If music be the sound of love, play on.
Food. If music be the food of love, play on.
Thank you. See, I told you it's been a minute. And that's why I was like sound. I was like, but here we go.
The sound. The sound of fury.
Yes, that's right. If music be the food of love.
Yeah. But the sound is of fury. Something sound. There's the big line of sound and fury. I believe that was a cross Shakespearean.
It could have been. Like I said, you know, I haven't looked for a while, so we got 75% of that quote in. I'll call it a win. you did the other, you did the 25. We're good.
All right. Okay. Black and a half.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Yes, this is Black and a Half, hosted by Silas Lindenstein and Samantha Rund.
Black and a Half.